And welcome to Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. We got a packed house today. We got Paul Dottino. We got former Giants fullback Henry Hynoski with us for the next 60 minutes. We'll get to your phone calls at 201-939-4513. You can also chime in via Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. We are at the middle of the beginning of the bye week, so we'll get into really a mid-season review over the next hour where we're going to give out some of awards that we came up with. We'll also get into what the Giants have accomplished over the first half of the season with a 4-3 record, and we'll look a little bit around the division, the NFC East, what that looks like heading into a busy week 8. So we look forward to getting to your phone calls, forward to your tweets over the next 60 minutes as well. So guys, let's start with pretty much big picture perspective here in terms of what you've seen from the first half of the season. Giants go 4-3. I think certain aspects of the defense have jumped out. Certain aspects of the offense have jumped out. We probably should note before we get to anything, Landon Collins was named NFC Defensive Player of the Week. So now the Giants actually, in the first half of the season, have had an offensive winner, Odell Beckham, against the Ravens. And then remember Janoris Jenkins for his blocked field goal, his return on the field goal block, I should say, for a touchdown in the Saints game. So they really have had to win with different facets at different times throughout the course of this season, Paul.
Well, Lance, I think the one thing that if you're the Giants, you have to be happy about, and Henry, I know the coaches always like to break the season into quarters, at least the coaches that I've talked to over the years, is that at this point, they're still above water. You know, they've had some struggles with the injuries. They've had some struggles with the offense, and yet they're above 500. They're in the middle of this race in this division. No one's running away with it, although, heck, I think a lot of people are surprised at how some of the other teams in the East have done as well as they have to this point. It is still a very clustered division, and the Giants have a big three-game homestand coming up, and they also know at the end of the season they're going to play Philadelphia and Washington to close things out. So positioning-wise, I think they're in good position. They're not in great position. They'd love to be 5-1, but they're in good position. You think, Henry?
Yeah, I do. You can't complain about being above 500 at this point. Bye week will give them good rest, but like you said, the division's competitive this year. It really is. Last year, I think we might – I was talking to Lance after the postgame. We might – the division might have more total wins this year at this point than they did all last year.
Yeah, it's crazy.
But it's amazing how things can turn around that quick. But I think the Giants are very happy where they're at right now. And you can't worry about other teams. You control your own destiny. If they win games, then, you know, they'll have a chance to get in the playoffs. Can't worry about teams losing at this point. Just about what you can do to improve your team moving forward and getting more wins, and the rest will take care of itself.
Two games, against the Philadelphia Eagles, still on the slate. Another game against the Cowboys, another game against the Redskins. They've only played two division games, so your point well taken, Henry. They could control their own destiny, and it's interesting you brought up last season how everybody pretty much was hovering around 500 or under. More of a reason why you can't rely on other teams losing to help your cause. Mm-hmm. You have to take care of business under those circumstances.
Yeah, this is the NFL. Anybody could win at any given week, unless you're Cleveland.
That's cruel.
Well, he can't argue with their current record, as they are 0-7, still searching for their first victory of the season. Before we open up the phone lines and get to your tweets, I thought it'd be interesting. We have about six different subjects in terms of awards that we have come up with now that it's the midseason. And let's go around and see if we can each come up. Maybe we'll disagree, maybe we'll agree, and so forth. Let's start. First one is defensive MVP in the first seven games this season for the New York Giants.
Yeah, I'm going Landon Collins. I think that he has really progressed in year number two. Yeah, would he still like to get better in deep pass coverage? Sure he would. Would he like to hold on to every single ball that hits his hands? Sure he would. So there's still some room for him to grow. But I think in year two, he has already made a big improvement from year one in terms of his maturity, in terms of his recognition, in terms of cutting down on his errors. I'm thinking this guy, the arrow continues to point up. He has the potential to be a Pro Bowl player at some point in his career. I'm not going to say it's going to happen right now, but he's certainly on the right track.
Yep, I agree with Paul on this one. I'm going to go with Landon Collins. But a couple guys you got to throw in the conversation, Janoris Jenkins.
Absolutely.
Been really good.
And I really like Keenan Robinson.
Yeah.
He's kind of sliding under the radar, but he's making big plays. Like we talked last week, a lot of great open field tackling by him, but a lot of great pass coverage by him, too, down the seams, down the middle, responsible for one of Collins' interceptions.
He had the deflection that set up the second one. Correct.
Yep.
It's funny, he was going to be the answer to one of my next upcoming awards, so you at least set that one up with a tease. In terms of defensive MVP, I would agree with the both of you. I think it's Landon Collins. Plus, I think the one thing I'll also add to what the two of you laid out is the fact that, remember, given all the injuries at the safety position, he's been the one constant back there.
Yes.
Now, let's not forget, he's been playing alongside various safeties just about every game.
He played all 16 games last year as a rookie and started all of them, so he's been incredibly durable. He doesn't come off the field. Okay, I mean, he's always out there. And for a guy who plays as physical and it hits like he does, you know, it is such a benefit to these coaches to know that they can count on him every single time.
Yeah, he's playing and conducting himself like a 4 or 5 year veteran guy, in my opinion. And it's only going to improve from here on out. The more experience you get, I mean, his stock and quality is just going to keep rising.
Well, and one of the things that we talked about on the radio postgame show after the last contest, Henry, was the fact that if you look at how the Rams are using Mark Barron, sort of as that safety hybrid linebacker, Landon Collins is very similar because he's been so steady on the line of scrimmage this season. And people probably don't overlook, or they easily overlook the fact that he's been probably more effective in helping stop the run and making big plays at the line of scrimmage more so than on the back end.
Go back years ago to how the Cardinals used John Lynch.
Yeah.
Remember him?
Yeah, of course.
And that's kind of what the Giants are doing with Collins, too. It's a very similar kind of package. And it's funny because they've been able to do that despite the fact that the free safety position has been a jumbled puzzle. You know, he doesn't have the same guy back there all the time. Andrew Adams has been there the last few weeks. But, you know, he thought he was going to have Darian Thompson. Then he thought he was going to have Nat Burhey. And then all of a sudden it was Andrew Adams. And Landon Collins has not let this affect him at all.
No, he's a resilient guy. And must be Alabama, him and Mark Barron, you know, both, I guess they were,
Must be, that's a good connection. Well, I'll tell you this, if you ask our colleague Howard Cross, all you need to do is say Alabama, and he's going to agree with you 100%, Henry, so no debate there.
That's why I brought it up now when he's not here.
When he's not there, very good. We always love to throw Howard in there when he's not here in terms of the conversation. All right, offensive MVP. We mentioned defensive MVP, we're all in agreement, it's Landon Collins. Offensive, I think, is a little bit more tricky because of some of the ups and downs that they've had in the first half of the season. And also, you know, it's easy to maybe pinpoint Odell Beckham or an Eli Manning, but I think there's some others that we can maybe dig a little bit deeper with respect to this.
Well, if you're going to allow me to go to the obvious, I do think Eli Manning would be the right answer.
Not
because,
surprised.
Well, because, listen, the offense has had trouble running the ball. We know that. And so Eli has had to basically gone up there with a one-arm bandit and said, okay, I got to try to find ways to be competitive and win games, even though we don't run the ball very well. That's a hard thing to do. And he's done it not only successfully to the point where his numbers have been certainly more than respectable, and they've won, you know, 4 games, but his turnover numbers are still very low, or relatively low, Henry. It's not like, you know, he's throwing the ball 45 times and getting picked off 3 times a game. That's not happening. And that does happen to some quarterbacks. So he has nonetheless been careful with the ball, even though he's had to throw it a ton. And, you know, I'm an Eli guy, so I'm going to go there. But I would say if you want to go also-ran under the radar, Justin Pugh, I think has played.
You're taking the words right out of my
mouth. Has played extremely well at left guard. And, you know, but I'll let Henry go on this one.
I agree 100% with Paulie. I love the you know, throwing out Pugh. Got to work in the grunts, you know, that are making it happen. But you have to go with Eli. Our running game right now is virtually ineffective. Teams understand that, so they're really focusing on defending the pass. I mean, that is their main focus. And for Eli to, you know, be playing relatively well and still making the plays that he's making with defenses putting that strain on him, you have to go with him.
And Eli deserves credit, the audibles, some of the plays that he's changed as a result of what the defense is showing. And I agree with you. I was going to throw out Justin Pugh because I was thinking a little bit outside the box. I mean, think about some of the defensive tackles that Pugh has had to deal with over the last few weeks, the Aaron Donalds of the world and so forth. And, you know, we look at the offensive line as a whole, but Pugh finally solidified in one position this season where he's a constant at the left guard position,
well,
as opposed
year
to being
was
a jack of all trades. But now being able to build
second
off of
year
that
in a row
and not being moved around. Plus, remember, he was moved around because of Ereck Flowers' injury last season.
A couple
the
times.
Game he missed with the Redskins, they moved Pugh back out
couple
to
times.
Left tackle. So this so far has been the one constant season where he's stuck in one position. So I think that's important to
know. Yeah, and you know, I mean, let's not kid ourselves. He's the leader of that offensive line. Okay, there's no question. He's the guy.
Yep.
He's the mouthpiece. He's the guy who they listen to. He's the guy who leads the way by example and vocally. I mean, he's a very well-spoken guy, and he's not afraid to tell you, too. I mean, if you're messing up, he'll tell you. I mean, this is the kind of guy. He's one of those blue-collar guys who block for Henry. You know, and the rest of the Giants, when they were winning the Super Bowls, he fits in with those guys.
Yeah, he has a really good mindset. And if my memory serves me correctly, I only remember one or two times where he got virtually beat this year on a pass rush. And he got called for holding.
He's been consistent.
Yeah, he's been solid.
Yeah, that's the other thing. He doesn't make penalties.
Right.
Yeah.
He's very clean with his play.
Yep, only a couple I could think of. So he's, you know, being in the grunts, you know, the grunts in the line of scrimmage, there's a lot that goes on in there. And for him to be penalty free, that's pretty impressive.
Well, and you brought up, Paul, that he resembles the old regime. Remember, David Deal was his mentor when he first came
yes.
in. So it's no surprise that he's taken a page out of David Deal's playbook. All right, we want to get to a few more quick ones before we open up the phone lines at 201-939-4513. This one I like. Most underrated players. Let's do one on offense and one on defense. And you know, you already named my guy, Henry Earl.
Well, I'm going to let him go first now.
Let him go first. Absolutely.
Okay. So defense, my guy,
Keenan Robinson.
Talk about Robinson.
Yeah.
Offense is tough, but I'm also a Richburg guy. I really appreciate what Weston Richburg does. He, like you said, with Pugh, he has the right attitude, the right mindset, kind of that old school. You know, offensive line that we had here in the past, he kind of resembles and takes after those guys. I'm a big Richburg supporter, so I think, you know, I think him and Pugh work nicely together in there, being right next to each other.
You guys are going to look at me a little weird here. I'm going to go John Jerry on offense.
I like John Jerry.
No, that's a good one. Yeah.
John Jerry has been much maligned by a lot of folks, including us at times, for saying, you know what, he doesn't block the run very well. Well, the whole Giants offensive line has struggled with run blocking, but one thing you can't say about John Jerry, he's not a turnstile. You know, when it comes to blocking for the pass, he's helped keep Eli upright. And he has gone against some pretty darn good tackles also, defensive tackles in the game. And John Jerry, how many times do you hear him called for a penalty? How many times do you see him, you know, reaching back? Knock? John Jerry, very underrated and done a solid job. You know, especially in pass pro. So I'm going to go there on offense.
Both guards have done a solid job.
I think. And then on defense, I'm going to go Jonathan Casillas.
That's another good one.
And the reason I'm going there is not just because he stays on the field for all the downs. Remember, he and Keenan Robinson are the nickelbackers. So he's on the field for all three downs, and he is the defensive co-captain. You know, he was the defensive captain, actually, co-captain on the team, but the defensive captain. And I really believe that he has blossomed in that role. He has become a vocal mouthpiece for this team. He has also been a guy who, you know, talks up teammates and really tries to encourage them and teach them. We heard yesterday about how he gave them a message, in addition to the coaches, about, hey, what you need to do during the bye week, what you need not to do. And I respect the guy who gets the kind of respect in the locker room from his teammates where they vote him captain. That says a lot to me. So I'm going to go Casillas.
Specifically B.J. Goodson,
like
who he referenced in the locker room yesterday in terms of one of the guys he's mentoring. I like that. The one that I'm going to go for offensive underrated player, because we already said Keenan Robinson, I'm going to go with Bobby Rainey. I think Rainey's done a really nice job as – I understand the running game hasn't blossomed, but what he's done as a receiver – to pick up some hard-fought yards, I think gets easily overlooked in the first half of the season. And no one really knew what his role on this team was going to be. Was it going to be a special teamer? You know, coverage was a question mark, as Tom Quinn brought up early in the season. And he's actually stamped out a nice role for himself with Shane Vereen going down.
He's been a spot player.
Yeah.
But when he's been in there, he's done what they asked him to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's slippery, man.
Correct.
He really is. He's hard to tackle. He just kind of, it's like he slides underneath people and, you know, like, gets out of their arm tackles. I mean, he's
elusive.
I like him. I really do. I think he fits nicely and complements well with the other backs in the offense.
Now you just got to show him how to hurdle people like you used to do.
Jeez. One too many, Paul.
And last one, biggest surprise in the first half of the season. Could be anywhere on the roster, defense, special teams, or offense.
For me, it's going to be Andrew Adams, because he's come in now these last several games and become the starting free safety when I don't know how many people even thought he was going to make the team, okay? Not only does he wind up making it because of the injuries, he's now the starting free safety, at least for the last several games, and he's done okay. I mean, we saw last year how the Giants' starting free safety struggled. Brandon Merriweather and Dahl, and it was, I mean, they were just picking guys up off the street, and they were having a very hard time trying to keep their thing together. And I think we all agree the Giants have defended the deep ball fairly well this year. And it's because the safeties, especially Adams, who's deep, when Collins is up near the line of scrimmage, he's not hurting them, Henry.
No, he's not. But I'm going to go with Bobby Hart on this one. I think
that's a good one, too.
I think Bobby's playing better than what everybody anticipated. I mean, if you look at it, he's not really getting picked on by stud defensive ends or anything like that. He's not really giving up a lot of hits and a lot of pressures on Eli, some here and there. But I think overall he's holding up better than what the team thought he was and what the fans and everybody else thought he was, too.
No, I think that's a great one, especially since he had to fill in for Marshall Newhouse, who nobody anticipated was going to go down. I'm going to take one from your last category, Paul. I think Jonathan Casillas has been a very nice surprise this season. Not that we didn't think he could play like this, but to me it's unusual for a veteran. He's an established veteran.
Yes.
At this point in his career to essentially almost have like a breakout campaign where I feel like he's taken his game to a new level. He's provided stability to that linebacking core. As you mentioned, he's become a vocal leader in losing John Beeson. He sort of filled that void, and he's made plays, whether it be everywhere on the field. So, I mean, to me, he's been a really pleasant surprise. There's been this position has been put under the microscope each of the last few seasons, the linebacking core, and now we've just pinpointed the fact that Keenan Robinson and Jonathan Casillas have been two consistent factors for this team that have made game-changing plays each and every week. I think that says a lot about how far that position has come along.
I think the Casillas naming is very interesting because this is a guy who'd been a special teams demon earlier in his career, then kind of developed into a sub-package nickel linebacker, and now he's a full-time three-down player.
Right.
You know, and for the first time in his career, he's out there all the time. And so you're right. I don't know that anybody expected him to be that much of a part of this defense. And I guess we probably should have figured that out, though, when the players voted him as the defensive captain right before the season. We probably should have figured that, you know what, they're seeing a lot more here than we've ever given him credit for.
Right. And even the years back when I was playing, when he was with New Orleans and those other teams, he was predominantly a sub-package guy.
Yeah.
And when I was, you know, in on third down doing the third down back stuff, I mean, I had to, you know, pick him up on a lot of blitzes over the years. And now all of a sudden he's the full-time guy. I mean, yeah, it's pretty impressive to make that adjustment.
I think it says a lot about his work ethic and so forth.
Can I add another award?
Sure.
Just because I want to do it.
On the fly. What else?
Just because I want to do it. Dwayne Harris has to get some type of award from us.
Mr. Toughness?
Tough guy.
Mr. Guts, Mr. Fortitude, Mr. You know, Tougher Than Steel, because Dwayne Harris has gotten peeled off the turf and the grass
specifically
more
the last
times
year.
In the last 2 years, and it happened again in London, okay, where he went into the locker room at halftime. First of all, he was down for several minutes on the field after getting absolutely drilled. And I'm not so sure that that shouldn't have been a penalty, by the way.
Yeah.
But that's for another discussion. And he could not breathe. And they had to cart him off. And he goes into the tunnel at halftime. They send him into the x-ray room, Henry. And they're taking x-rays on him. And nobody in that stadium expected to see him again. Trust me. We were all, you know, wow. I just hope he's doing okay because that looks really bad. And then what happens? Fourth quarter. And there's Dwayne Harris running out onto the field to field a punt. Are you kidding me? This guy is, I mean... Steel is not tough enough to tell you about what Dwayne Harris is about.
Oh, well, I lost that connection there, but it came back on right now. Dwayne Harris, another throwback. The thing with him, a lot of guts, and he'll take chances. You know, that's why.
Oh, he's not afraid.
Yeah, he's not afraid
of anything.
I mean, how many times do you see him fair catching? I mean, he wants to return the ball every time he can, so he takes a lot of chance and
he hits people when he doesn't have the ball.
His coverage job.
Yeah, exactly. I love. You know, when he's returning a punt and it's going over his head and he just absolutely decks a gunner on the sideline.
He did that last week. Quite frankly, I think the Rams knew that. And the next time down when he returned a punt, they gave it to him.
Well.
I want to just mention this, too. He is not a showboat guy either.
No, not at all. He goes out and does his job.
He is incredibly tough and durable and all that great stuff, and yet you will never see him go me, myself, I. You'll never see him dance. You'll never see him, you know, doing anything to draw attention to himself. Dwayne Harris is a guy who brings his lunch pail, says, okay, kick me in the face. I'm coming right back at you next time. That's just the way he is. I have tremendous respect for him.
I do, too, and great locker room guy. I was able to have a year with him here, and You know, just he brings a good presence in the locker room. Everybody likes the guy. Everybody respects him. You know, that people don't understand how far that goes for a team.
So what you're saying is you're much more animated on the sideline than he is then?
That's no, because on the sidelines, I know I have to behave myself.
Well, I don't know about that. My inside sources tell me otherwise. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. We'll get to your phone calls here in a second. I just wanted to throw out a stat that supports your point from earlier, Henry. You were comparing the win total from the NFC East in 15 mm-hmm. versus this year. David Dominic, our producer, jack of all trades behind the scenes. Total wins for the NFC East last year, 26. As of right now, 17.
Yep.
So in another 2 weeks, they could very well match that total.
Absolutely, by mid-season. Amazing.
Wow.
Just goes to show you how one season doesn't necessarily dictate the tone of the following
season.
With
two rookie quarterbacks?
Yeah. A lot of surprises in this division, making it extremely competitive. All right, let's open up the phone lines. 201-939-4513. We got to your tweets as well. Hashtag Giants Chat. Len is in Columbia, Maryland. He gets us started on Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. How we doing, Len?
Hey, hi, guys. How you doing?
Hey, Len.
Doing well.
Good. Hey, Henry, find your helmet. You're going in on the next series.
We'll see. It's not looking too good. I'm enjoying my time with these guys here right now.
Hey, good for you. Good for you, Henry.
Thank you.
Well, listen, 4-3, 9 games to go. We run the table to 13-3. My big concerns, the game in Pittsburgh, the game in Philly. I think we're getting started. I think we're going to be on a roll. I had a feeling the second half of the season we were going to be a better football team, and you can see it starting to come together, particularly on defense. I think by the end of the year, this defense is going to be, it's really going to be something to behold. If we can get the safety back, if we can get Thompson back, hopefully he's healthy enough to get back soon. And we get a little better play out of the middle linebacker position. Maybe we can talk about that in a little bit. I think the defense is going to be something. Hey, Keenan Robinson, man, the guy has been – stay healthy, Keenan. I mean, I think by the end of the year, the whole league is going to be talking about Keenan Robinson on the New York Giants. This guy has just been terrific, but not totally unexpected. You know, we got him, and people said if he stays healthy, this guy can play. He can really play.
Well, that was the key. That was the key. The key was his durability, which is what everybody talked about.
Yeah,
and knock on wood, you're right. He stayed healthy, so he's been able to contribute.
Yeah. Hey, one other name I want to throw out there, fit him in where you can, stay healthy, buddy. Devin Kennard, just steady as a rock at linebacker. Boy, what a difference at linebacker with, these outside guys and adding Keenan. I want to say something about the middle linebacker position. Ran some stats up, guys. 7 games, 6 unassisted tackles out of the middle linebacker position. It just seems to me we just have to get more out of that. We just have to get more out of the middle linebacker. You guys have any comments? Maybe there's something I'm missing. But in a 4-3 defense, man, get your body in there. Anything you guys want to say on that? I'm frustrated.
I'm going to throw out something here, and then maybe Henry can build off of it. But the Giants are in sub-package a lot, which means they've got the two sub-package guys in there, Casillas and Robinson. So that means Shepard's coming off the field. And, I don't know what the number is and how many snaps he's played so far this season, but I guarantee you it's a much smaller percentage than you might think, and that's obviously going to diminish his tackles.
And Kennard, too, comes off the field.
Yes, he does.
In sub-packages. Yeah. Kennard and Shepard have been playing great in base defense, but teams are not really doing the two tight end fullback thing anymore. A lot of spreading out, so that's where the sub-package becomes elicited. But I really believe that Kennard is one of the better run-defending linebackers in the NFC East. I do.
I think he's
very stout there, but unfortunately he comes off the field because of sub-packages and defending the pass, and that's where guys like Casillas and Robinson come in. But I think Shepard and Robinson, I'd say they're around, maybe 20 plays a game on defense?
It seems like it.
And then guys like Robinson and Casillas, they're up around 40, 50 plays a game. So it's really lopsided in that effect.
As Paul knows, I'm an old guy. Maybe it's to see more out of that middle linebacker. I want to see more production from that middle linebacker. a real presence in the middle linebacker, and I just don't think it's there right now. Maybe the second half of the season, we'll see what happens. I'm optimistic about that defense. I think it's really going to grow into something special by the time it's over, and that they played us. They're going to remember that they played us. Hey, listen, thanks for taking my call, guys.
You got it, Len. Appreciate the phone call.
Right.
Thanks very much. You know, the other thing you have to remember, too, a lot of tackles are being taken up by Landon Collins. Mm-hmm. Collins is coming up to the line. He's coming in from that safety spot, and he's filling gaps, and he's shooting gaps, and he's got his nose for the ball, and he's getting there making tackles maybe before some of his teammates can.
Yeah, can't complain about that. No. But I always say it's never the greatest thing when a safety or defensive back leads a team in tackles, but this is a different breed of safety here we're talking about.
And, you know, even some of those all-pro guys of the past, sometimes they would, and it's just because of the scheme they play and the kind of talent you're talking about. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are exceptions to that rule, but I agree with you. Most often you don't want that.
Right, but the fact where how he plays, though, I think it's a good thing for our defense and the way it's structured.
Well, that opportunistic type of flavor, they need that, especially with what happened in the last game. When you get four turnovers and you can then punch it into the end zone, you'll take that. In terms of Len's point about wanting to see more productivity out of the middle linebackers, or at least tackling, I felt that oftentimes, and I thought they were crisp against the Rams, not a lot of missed tackles against the Rams, very well-disciplined defense.
Much better.
That helped compared to what we saw against the Vikings and the Packers, but I felt that a number of the missed tackles in the previous two games was more on the edge than necessarily in the middle of the field. I mean, the Randall Cobb play, which was a 3rd and 9, that was more of the middle of the field. But the Adam Thielen play against the Vikings, that was off the edge, if you remember. That was a 2nd and 18, and then Thielen wound up converting on the first down.
You see what, Lance, I don't excuse missed tackles no matter where they are on the field.
No,
I don't care if they're on
the
edge or not.
I
that's
agree
not good.
With you. I'm just saying that he was talking specifically about the middle linebacker position, and I felt that the previous two games, more of the mishaps are happening off the edge is what I'm saying.
I don't know that I would agree with that. I think I'd have to review it before I actually broke that down because, see, to me, I'm offended by missed tackles, period. And I said during the losing streak, one thing we didn't see when the Giants won the first two games, if they had 3 or 4 missed tackles between both games, it was a lot. Then, all of a sudden, they lost 3 in a row, and in each one of those games, they had like 10 missed tackles. It was just horrific. And now, oh, lo and behold, the last two games they won, missed tackles are down again. Look, folks, that's you want to talk about awards and most this, most that. One of the most underrated stats in football is missed tackles. They'll kill you.
Well, we've seen that in the Vikings and the Packers game. I mean, think about how many third downs you get the opposing team off the field, and then they convert, and the drive continues.
I mean, in a way, a missed tackle on a third down conversion, that's like a turnover.
Yeah, it really is. It's
or even a penalty on a third down.
Yeah.
It's amazing how it could change the course of a game. We talk about this a lot.
I mean, yeah. He's now in this office, so he gets a headache listening to me all the time.
We have good conversation, though.
Oh, wow. Henry's very polite on the air today, apparently. He's buttering people up. Let's head back to the phone lines. We got Ralph in Tom's River. Ralph, what's happening? Ralph, are you there? Our Ralph is a man of very few words, apparently, this afternoon. So let's try Alan in our nation's capital. Alan, what's happening?
Hello, Lance.
How we doing, Alan?
Is that the great number 45, Henry Hynoski?
How you doing?
Oh, my God. I still remember your dance, man. I'm still that dance against Philly. I mean, I love that day. We were killing them. And then you did your dance and just put the icing on the cake. Oh,
thank you. I appreciate that. That was a long time coming. I practiced that like 6 months in advance. So it only took to the last game of the year to do that.
Yeah, you ran drills for that, right?
Great.
You ran drills.
I remember in training camp, me and Spencer Pacinger and I, proper English here, we went over that and thought of it together right there in training camp up in Albany.
Very nice.
Yeah, I still remember it, man, but thank you for your years of service with the Giants. We sure could use you. I mean, our running game is horrible. I mean, I remember vaguely from watching you, I mean, we never had, like, negative yards. I mean, we always had positive yards. I mean, we didn't have breakouts all the time, but, you know, we missed that fullback position. I mean, like, I don't like the way we're construed right now, but the running game is horrible right now. you know, it is a passing league, and Eli and, you know, all the other weapons we have, but that run game needs serious, serious help if we're going to compete in the NFC East. My question for you guys is, what do you think, how do you think we're going to do with the loss of our kicker? And also, who do you think is going to win the Dallas-Philly game Sunday night?
Okay, well, appreciate the phone call, Alan. Thanks so much for chiming in.
I mean, Robbie Gould has an outstanding resume. He's been in this league quite a long time, and he has gone to the Pro Bowl before, and he's about as good as they come. Now, the reason the Bears cut him back in the preseason was because they were of the opinion that they wanted a strong-legged guy who would still boom the ball through the end zone and get touchbacks. Now, with the rule change this year, touchbacks are now coming out to the 25. There are some coaches that actually don't want you to do that. They want to kick the mortar kick or the pooch kick or the rainbow kick, call it whatever you want, but they actually want their kicker to be short of the end zone because they want to force the other team to have to run it out because they think their coverage teams can stop you inside the 25. Now, the Bears are not of that grouping, so they decided that Robbie Gould's kickoffs were too short for them. He's not giving us touchbacks. We're going to cut him. And that's what happened. It wasn't because he couldn't make field goals anymore. They just decided they wanted a different style of kickoff. Well, guess what? That's fine for the Giants because the Giants believe they've got good kickoff coverage units.
Yeah, and we've proven that we have pretty good coverage units so far this year. But I think the important thing is getting points with the offense, you know, sputtering at times. We need a reliable field goal kicker.
And
he is. I mean, you look around the league, you're going to be hard-pressed to find a guy that's more qualified. And I think he fits in well with the organization, the team. I got talking with him yesterday or 2 days ago, and really nice guy.
Yeah,
really,
very nice.
Really enjoy conversation with him. I think he's going to do well here.
I agree.
Yeah, Paul and I had a conversation with him, too. Very down-to-earth type of guy, looking forward to meshing with his new teammates. And, you know, you brought up his efficiency. He was the best kicker in franchise history with the Chicago Bears in terms of efficiency and making field goals. So I don't think it's going to be much of a transition. And considering, remember, he hopped off the plane in London and then first had to meet Brad Wing and Zach D'Aussie, and they didn't miss a beat.
Yeah.
On a brand new turf in a brand new stadium, I think that speaks volumes. If they can get that done on short notice, you can imagine what could be done when they have a full week of preparation.
And let's not forget, now, he's coming from Chicago to New York. He is recognizing these are two of the glorious franchises in the NFL. He respects that. He understands it. He appreciates it. And he was already asking me where I get good Italian food. So come on.
Well,
you know he's A-plus with me.
Yeah. All he had to say
good
was Italian
gold, right?
Food. Correct. You get Paul talking about Italian food. I don't know. We may not even want to get into that subject because then we're not going to talk Giants for the rest
of
the show.
It is lunch, you know.
Speaking of, I think they have pizza and lunch today.
They do.
I'm excited about this.
He's already sampled that, Henry.
I had a sample.
He beat you to it.
We always talk about Italian food, so I'm half Italian, so, you know.
So there you go. You love the food talk. You're not going to turn that down.
No, it's always working its way in somehow.
Yes. Well, I'm glad that we got that part of the show out of the way. Now we can move on. In terms of the second part of Alan's question, which was the Cowboys-Eagles matchup this weekend, Sunday Night Football, and who he thinks perhaps is going to have an edge, you've got two teams that I think have played very well, all things considered, with rookie quarterbacks. Eagles are coming off a very impressive game against the Minnesota Vikings. They were able to turn the ball over against Sam Bradford. Special teams was able to deliver as well, and we knew that going back over the last few seasons. You know, Cowboys are coming off the bye, unlike Philadelphia. Now, this is going to be a very tough game, a very tight game. I would be stunned if one of these teams runs away with this contest, given how consistent they've been over the last few weeks.
I'm more interested, rather than projecting a winner here, I want to get Henry's take on the kind of physical battles that go on within the NFC East, because the Giants will play Philadelphia next weekend here in the Meadowlands. After you come out of a game within the NFC East, Henry, what is it like that following week? Do you hurt more? Do you ache more?
Well, being a fullback, you always hurt. But I always thought that the Dallas game, whenever we played Dallas, I think for some reason things amp up a lot more for that game than any other game. And maybe it's because my first game against Dallas, I got in like five fights with Brady James. So I don't know. maybe that had something.
No, it's because Brandon Jacobs hated the star. That's
why.
Yeah.
Maybe that was it. But it definitely does pick up in the East. But more so the Cowboys, for my opinion, than any other team. And yeah, I mean, you do. You're certainly feeling it, especially if it's one of those grinded out, you know, run lead ISO games. Yeah, you notice it the next day. It's hard to get out of bed.
And we know the Cowboys are going to run it because Ezekiel Elliott has already established himself very early in his career as a go-to guy. So they're gonna bruise the Eagles.
Yeah. Where's this game? Where's it at? Where's it being played at?
That's a good question. I have to check that. I don't know off the top of my head if this one's in Philly or in Dallas. We'll check. But what I was going to say in the meantime was Dallas is number one in rushing yards per game. Mm-hmm. So they're mimicking 2014 all over again. And the other thing that I wanted to throw out was, you know, don't overlook the Washington Redskins. I feel as if they're like the stepchild in this division and nobody wants to talk about them. They were 0-2. They won four straight. I know they had a setback late in the game against the Lions, but they're playing in London against the Bengals, a team that's been very up and down. Washington is very much back in the thick of things here.
The whole division's in the thick of it. Yeah. But I guess what my point is in terms of what's going to happen this weekend, regardless of what happens, I think Dallas is going to give Philly a very physical, rough, and tough type of game, especially the way they're playing with the kind of personnel they have. Philly's going to come out of that game feeling pretty beaten up, I think, coming in here to the Meadowlands next week.
The other thing you have to think about, too, though, who in their right mind would have thought that Philly was going to beat Minnesota?
Oh.
You know?
Well, that's why it's unpredictable.
Wow. Yeah. Wow.
The game is in Dallas, by the way,
and,
Henry.
Oh, okay. And that could go either way, too. They're feeling good about themselves. They beat Minnesota. They think they're unstoppable. You know, so or they could, you know, ride that momentum. It could go either way. I mean, this is a tough call. I really don't have a prediction. I don't know. I don't know who's going to win this.
Well, the only thing I will say is Dak Prescott's done a better job protecting the football as of late than Carson Wentz. Wentz was picked off twice by the Vikings. Cowboys a little bit more opportunistic. We talk about turnover differential, how the Giants have flip-flopped. I was looking over the Dallas numbers the other day. How about this? They were minus 22 in turnover differential last season, the Cowboys. Dead last in the NFL. They're plus
Amazing.
Four this season.
Amazing.
That helps you win games. Well, -22 to +4.
This could easily be one of those games where special teams makes the difference, and we know Philly's always had good special teams.
Yeah, prove it last week with the kickoff return.
Very well come down to that. And especially with Dallas losing Dwayne Harris, you know, it doesn't feel like they have had any start to their special
teams. This is the second year without him. They still haven't replaced him.
I mean, they've used Lucky Whitehead, but I don't think he's provided the same type of game-changing plays as Dwayne Harris did when he was there.
Dwayne's a different animal, we talked about earlier, and that's just his toughness and his ability to take chances and risk. And most of the time it pans out on the plus side for him and the team.
Let's head back to the phone lines. Lance Meadow, Paul Dottino, Henry Hynoski with you here for Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live, talking big picture for the Giants as they head into the bye week, some of the trends we've seen out of the team, the state of the NFC East, and so forth. Let's head back to your phone at 201-939-4513. Peter is in Massachusetts. Peter, what's happening?
Hey, good afternoon, Lance, Paulie, and Henry Hynoski. What's going on, guys?
How you doing?
Doing well, Peter. How's things with you?
All right, good. Listen, a couple points, and then I'm going to give you guys three players on defense and three players on offense that I feel were first half of the season were MVP-type players for us. First thing, Paulie, I know you're a big man when it comes to the trenches and all that, so this is more towards you. The running game is very vanilla, very predictable. Seems like we're running always off a shotgun, that the draw there off of the shotgun. We no longer use I formations like when Henry was there or split back. Maybe we should bring in Brett Jones as a lead blocker there, or Will Ty, somebody big like that. Or even once in a while, throw the halfback toss. I don't know, just something different. Mix it up. We becoming too much of a very boring dink and dunk offense. It's not really the Giant way. I mean, I came here in 86, and we were pounding ground when I came to this country. I mean, Giants were just pounding ground. They would physically abuse you. And we got away from that. I don't know if it's maybe the new West Coast offense. I don't know what it is.
Well, I understand the game has changed, my friend, and not only has the game changed and the style and the philosophies have changed, the personnel on that 86 team, you're talking about the suburbanites of an offensive line. You're talking about Maurice Carthon, who was a battering fullback, and Joe Morris, who was one of the greatest running backs in franchise history. So the talent level of that personnel was really high. I mean, it's unfair to compare these guys and say, well, they got to meet that bar. I mean, those guys were all pros.
And every offense was like
it.
That.
I get it, Paulie. You're right. It's just.
I mean, I hear you. I feel your pain, man. I love the trenches, you know, but those guys were special. That's why they won a championship.
All right. I'm going to three defensive guys that I feel that, honestly, when the season first started, I had no idea they were going to play this good. Landon Collins, I mean, he's playing at an all-pro level. This guy is unreal right now. Two sacks, two intos, return one for touchdown. He's the team in tackles. I mean, he's making Earl Thomas and all these strong safeties not even look as good as he is right now. Keenan Robinson, this guy has been amazing, especially in coverage. I mean, amazing. I can't believe he's playing that good. I mean, unreal. JC, I mean, no wonder he's a team captain. This guy is all heart. Unreal the way he's just playing, and he works hard, and just love it. Love his attitude, his Giants-style football right there. On offense, who would have thought Victor Cruz would give us what he's given us with the injuries he had? Amazing. I love Victor Cruz, my favorite Giant of all times. Me being a Puerto Rican, obviously, it's a big deal to us. Justin Pugh, Pro Bowler this year. I don't care what anybody says. He is the best offensive lineman we got. And the biggest surprise is Bobby Hart, man. That guy, I had no idea he would come in and step into that role and done such a great job. Love you guys. Watch you guys every day out here in Massachusetts. Tough being a Giants fan out here. But you guys get me through it. So thank you guys. You guys have a good day, all right?
All right, Peter. Appreciate
thank you.
The phone
thank
call.
You.
Oh, Henry. Henry, one more thing. Henry, love your touchdown dance against Philadelphia, man. Classic, all-time Giant classic dance right there. Love it.
Thank you. I appreciate
Take care,
that.
Guys.
Appreciate the support.
Does
all
anybody
right,
have a GIF or GIF of that on Twitter?
Oh, geez, I don't know.
We'll have to dig through.
Got to find that out. Got to find that out. That would be very cool to see. Yeah.
I'm sure it's on YouTube. It's got to be.
It must be YouTube. But one thing, he did mention Victor Cruz, and we were negligent. Somehow, some way, the Jersey Pride Award to Victor Cruz because he has come back from over 700 days of inactivity, of two horrific injuries that would have probably ended most people's careers. And not only did he make the team, he's starting.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, much respect.
Yeah, and he's actually, I mean, a couple drops here and there, but he's doing his part now. He really
is.
Oh,
he's been a good contributor.
Yeah, he is. And you can always count on him, reliable guy, wonderful human being more so than anything. And, you know, I always love talking with Vic. Just brightens up my day. He just always has that attitude, that demeanor, always thinking positive and, you know, great locker room guy to have.
Yeah.
Saints game makes that big third down conversion to seal the contest. So he's put his stamp on a
winning
victory
touchdown
already this
catch
season.
Against the Cowboys.
Yeah. But the Saints game to me really jumps out because you don't make that play. Drew Brees perhaps gets another possession, another opportunity.
Oh,
there.
I get that. That was huge. I get that. But, you know, he and Eli, they improvised on that touchdown catch to beat the Cowboys.
Yeah.
And you know, you can never undervalue the chemistry between a receiver and his quarterback. And Victor knew what he was doing. Eli knew what Victor was going to do. And they had that osmosis going on that winning touchdown catch. There's value there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And they've done it in the past. And trust me, they'll get it going again here in the future. Oh, geez.
You see, Paul asks, and the internet delivers. We thank Dave Dominic, as I mentioned, behind the scenes, does a lot of the heavy lifting. So here we got the GIF. The Rhino going to work.
And where can people find this?
This is on SB Nation. I will tweet it out after the show.
Please
That's what
do.
I'm doing. I'm assuming Henry gives me permission. So we
That's
but
fine.
But we'll hold it up. Maybe the camera can pick it up here. But there he is. Henry Hynoski in the corner going to work at the Meadowlands. So there we go. All right. We will also perhaps find the YouTube full clip at a later time here on the program. That's our little tease as we move forward. See, Dave's already sent me that link. But in the meantime, let's get some more phone calls involved here on the program. We got Joe in Pennsylvania. Joe, what's happening?
Hey, hi, Lance, Paul.
Hi.
Henry, I'm a coal cracker from your area there, big Shamokin, PA there.
Shamokin, high school rival there. That was always a big game.
Okay.
Yeah, you're dynamite, Henry. I met you at the sports bar wayside there. I just wish you'd coach some of our offensive players. Whatever they do, you never hurt the team. You never did. Very few penalties. You were always on your blocks. If that's what we are off, if you could teach our offense that, the receivers just catch the ball first. Don't do anything but catch the ball. Goofy penalties. Look how many times we put our defense out to dry. Look at the time of possession. We ain't going nowhere unless we straighten that out. Really and truly, I wish, you know, over this time here, this time period that we had off, I'd do something. The first game against Dallas, believe it or not, we outrushed them 100 yards, and since then it's been downhill. We had over 100 yards. I'd max protect. I'd put BD in there or something like that. You know what let's see, the old coach there, the Eagles, what he used to do on LeSean Jackson, send him on a flight pattern now and then. I'd rather do that our receiver there, what's his name, Beckham, instead of that goofy pass on the side there and having the receivers trying to block for him. Our offense got to come together and stop hurting the team. Either max protect and try to run the ball, whatever you do, known in these goofy penalties. We ain't going nowhere. I feel we're the best rounded team in the NFC East. I'll match up our defense against the Eagles, and they have a new coordinator. There's no excuses this year. We better beat them. And really and truly, like the last few games, freaking Eli's been getting killed against the Eagles. I mean, he has, you know, it's a shame. We better max protect and run, and whatever we do, don't turn the ball over or hurt the, you know what I mean, giving them the ball right away with goofy penalties. That's all we have to do, you know, play sound football and think. So, hey, great to talk to you.
All right, Joe.
All right.
Appreciate the phone call.
Really and truly, do you think we're the best rounded team? I'll take our defense over the Eagles now. I'll take our offense over the Eagles. The Cowboys might. The only thing they have is that great offensive line, and we beat them. But we're a better rounded team. You think there's a better rounded team? Maybe the Skins. I think they're the next rounded team.
Joe, the problem with that statement is that almost every other week in this division, you could say one of the teams is the best team in the division that Sunday.
Yeah.
And then the next Sunday, it's another team, and it keeps changing. It's that close. I'm not going to argue with you that the Giants could be the best team in the division, but it like the waves come and go. The tide comes and goes. It changes.
Well, and Joe, here's another thing. Let's not overlook the fact, in fairness, the Eagles held both the Steelers and the Vikings to a field goal.
That's really good.
Yeah, well,
that's impressive.
The Vikings turned the ball over.
Well, but,
the Eagles are,
but listen,
are really
but
and truly.
Joe, the thing is,
they were terrible.
There's going to be mishaps. There's going to be turnovers in every game. I think it's only fair. You got to give a team credit if they hold the opposition to a field goal, whether it's because of turnovers or because of hardcore defense. To hold Ben Roethlisberger and company to 3 points, I think that's an impressive undertaking.
Our offensive line better block for Eli this coming game and stop turning the balls over. I'm telling you, I'm sick of it. It's disgusting, really and truly. Whatever you do, don't hurt the team.
Joe,
we'll be all right.
Deep breath, Joe. It's okay.
Get Henry in there to tune them up. That's all
they're,
I can say.
Joe, they're 4-3, and they got the Eagles a week from Sunday. Relax.
Yeah, but
relax.
How hard is
good
it
luck
to
telling
stop
him
our
to relax.
Offense? All you have to do is double down Beckham and let the rest of the team try to beat us. You know what I mean?
All right,
and
Joe.
That's
Joe,
all they do.
I'm going to ask Henry a question about the running game. Listen on to the program. It might help a little bit, okay? Enjoy the phone call, and we'll talk to you again soon.
All right, Joe.
Henry, let me ask you schematically. We've had people ask us about running out of the shotgun or running out of a standard set or when the quarterback calls a running play from under center instead of calling it from the gun. Mm-hmm. What are the advantages and disadvantages to running either out of a regular stance with the shotgun, having the ball handed in your gut, or running it out of a set with the quarterback over center?
Running out of a shotgun with the same personnel group, you're limited. You could maybe run two or three different plays out of that. Under center, there's weak side runs, strong side runs, which we talk about all the time.
We do.
But you could put in more personnel groups. Just the amount of plays you can run under center in a base type of offense, it gives a whole different look and a whole different complexion to the offense. At a shotgun, you could, you know, all the run plays look the same, but in all reality, there's a couple different ones. But under center, the playbook opens up tenfold, and you can run weak side, you can run strong side, you can overload sides, you can have a lead blocker, you can bring jumbo packages, and you can add another tight end in the offensive lineman to play tight end. You can create unbalanced formations. There's so many options you can do in that sense, and I really believe that they're going to explore that over the bye week. I do. I think they're recognizing that out of the same personnel group, are the amount of running plays that we can carry into a game plan is extremely limited right now with what we have, with what the Giants have. I think going forward, this is an issue that they're going to address. We have smart coaches, and they know that going forward, if we want to keep winning games, that we can't keep doing it the way we're doing it now. The offense and the run game has to pull their weight. We can't rely entirely on the defense and put the weight all on their shoulders.
Mm-hmm. Good stuff.
I think Joe is spending a little too much time at Eagles territory, and it's starting to get to him. I think that we could tell based on that last phone call.
He's one of the best fans we have on this,
very
on this
passionate,
program.
No doubt.
I just think at the moment, you know, he's got to relax a little bit.
I agree. I mean, you would think that they're playing this Sunday with the way he's talking.
I know. You're going to burn
out. You got to enjoy the bye week,
Joe. He's going to burn out before the game.
You got to preserve the energy.
Hey, now let me tell you something about my area where I grew up in Pennsylvania. It is 100% football there. I mean, everything shuts down for football. Trust me. It is, it's a blue-collar area.
What's the mix? Steelers, Eagles, Giants. What's the mix?
Mostly Eagles, but then probably Giants and then Steelers.
And then Steelers. Okay. Wow, Steelers being third. Okay.
Yeah. But it's coal country where I'm at, not steel country. There's a difference.
Now, when you say shut down, though, we're talking just Sundays, or we're talking about the weekend? What are we talking about?
Friday night, high school football. Saturday, college ball is probably not as big, but it is big Penn State country out there. So when Penn State's on, shuts down. Saturday's not an all-day shutdown, just when Penn State's playing.
Yeah.
Sunday's shut down.
So there's time
and Monday night is, too.
There's time to be productive in between the games.
In between. Football takes precedence in central Pennsylvania, trust me.
There you go. See, the problem is Joe subscribes to the schedule where he shuts down starting on Tuesday night. Okay? He doesn't wait till Friday, Henry. That's the problem.
He's a diehard.
He's a great caller.
All right, let's head back to the phone lines here. We got Phil in North Carolina. Phil, what's happening?
Yes, Phil. What do you got for us? Sorry. My question or beef basically goes to the tight end, and I'm using the misguided kind of re-signing or lack of re-signing of key players over time. I think I brought this up a few times, but I have my list of Giants that I wish the team re-signed, and because of just a small amount of discrepancy in money, we didn't sign him, and I think that was kind of foolish. So my biggest beef right now is, and the example I'm going to give is Marcellus Bennett. And
well, Phil,
Phil, let me finish.
All right.
We had Marcellus Bennett for
Martellus,
the last
by the way.
Years,
yeah.
We would have had at least five more victories.
Well, the point I was going to say is that the way you laid it out was as if Martellus Bennett was not brought back over pennies, the way you worded it.
He got a huge deal to go to Chicago.
And that was the point I was going to bring up, Phil. I think you got to go look back at what the Bears offered him and the type of money that he was able to obtain from them. In all fairness, it was not pennies. It was far from that. He was one of the most highest paid tight ends on the market at that time.
Okay, so let's look at those numbers. What was he getting with the Giants?
He had a one-year deal with the Giants. Remember, he was the backup to Jason Witten. It was a low-risk, high-reward type of deal. He wanted an opportunity to be a starter, and he felt to himself, hey, if I could be productive, then maybe I could cash in elsewhere.
Okay, so we gave him 1 year. I know that. We gave him 1 year, and I think it was pretty small, like $1.5 million.
In that ballpark,
and he got roughly with the Bears. He went on, and basically ratcheted up to like $4 million, 3 years, $4 million each year, right?
I feel like he got more. I'm looking it up right now. I want to get the specific numbers. Yeah,
total.
He got more than that in terms of $3 million.
Okay. So let's say it's $4 million differential. Is $4 million differential to the tight allocated to the superior tight end? Isn't it worth five games over the lifetime? You know that he could have won.
Well, it was a four-year deal for slightly more than $20 million. So he got a little bit over $5 million per year. That's number one. Number two, and Paul, I don't know if you remember, even Henry, I got to go back and look at what the other players on the market were. I mean, the Giants had other needs other than tight end.
At the time, they were not in a position to be throwing money under the cap to as many of these guys as you might want to list. So before you even go further with your list, the one thing you have to do is go back to that date and say, okay, how much was available? How many holes did they have? Who were the guys they had to try to get? That's where you can make your argument. To do it now and just throw out numbers and players is really not fair.
if I'm not mistaken.
Well, I'm not doing it now. It was painful during the process.
No,
I just haven't expressed it to you lately. I'm going to give you another example who really irked the hell out of me is Dan Campbell.
Dan, you know how many years ago that is?
Well, I'm a longtime Giants fan, so
wait a minute. Hold on. Dan Campbell's not relevant today. And by the way, if you watch this program, you know I'm a big Dan Campbell fan.
Right.
And you know
We didn't resign him.
Okay.
It was foolish because Shockey was never the same after that.
But wait a second. Dan Campbell's not relevant to today.
The salary cap is.
You're talking about the late 1990s.
Right. Right. Well, let me bring up Jack Gregory.
Are you suggesting Jack Gregory from the 70s?
When the salary cap didn't even exist.
And he was a defensive end, by the way. But no. Here's what I'm saying to you. I appreciate the fact that over the course of time, there may have been some players that you would have liked to have retained who got away. Guys like Linval Joseph. I understand that. Please don't. We're not mocking you in that regard. But you also must take into account the situation at the time when the player's contract expires. There are so many circumstances involved that may not allow them to make that retention. Sometimes it just has to be because you have other circumstances.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, I think around the time when Bennett was a free agent, weren't we trying to create cap space at that point?
Well, the Giants needed cap room for there was a 3-year span there where they were so
tight
against it.
Yeah.
It was like they got to do something and they could not. I don't want to use the word overpay because Martellus Bennett's been a very productive player, but they could not reach.
Right.
You know, for just one guy and say, well, you know what, we're gonna spend the money there. I mean, it gets very difficult to do that when your cap space is tight.
Yeah, Phil, I understand where you're coming from, but I think piggybacking off of Paul's point, you can't look at it with an isolated incident. And you can't just say Martellus Bennett was the only guy out there and that should have been priority number one when you have to weigh in other positions and the salary cap issues that the Giants were facing at the time. That's the fair way to look at it.
And you're making valid points that I recognize. But I'm using simple examples. But really, what I'm at is our prioritization is off. Our prioritization is off. I know exactly why they didn't sign these guys because they don't value some of those positions high enough, and that's why they don't allocate the resources. What I'm saying is they have to reevaluate their prioritization because. Look what the New England does with their two tight ends.
Well, let me just ask you this, and I mean this. All right, you've taken the time to try to make up a list before. I'm going to ask you to make up another list before the next time you call. Tell me, in the Super Bowl era, since the 2007 Super Bowl, the last decade, go back and look at all the Giants free agents who were allowed to leave the building, and tell me how many of those guys actually went on to have a productive 2 or 3 years with another team. Now, Martellus Bennett's one of them. Linval Joseph is another one. How many other guys? And then make a list of how many free agents they allow to walk. And I think you will find that percentage is actually very, very low.
I'm trying to think right now. I can't think of really anybody besides the two that you mentioned.
Right?
Yeah.
I'm going to have to go.
Well, it's a limited
list.
I'll tell you that. I mean, even draft picks that have left the team and then have gone on and gotten opportunities elsewhere, too.
It's really not a long list. So I appreciate the fact that there's a player you really wanted to keep, but I think when you consider the overwhelming evidence, you'll realize that they have not really allowed quality players to walk free out of the building and then go on and do something else. I mean, OC didn't do much with Atlanta.
But I guess I want the percentage even lower is what I'm saying.
Well, Phil, listen, we're going to let you go because we got a few more calls and we're nearing the end of the show. Number one, do appreciate your phone call.
And not same overly thing, productive
right?
either.
That was,
yeah, exactly.
And that was at the tail end of his career,
yeah,
too.
Exactly, yeah.
But the other point that I wanted to emphasize, you know, Phil was bringing up the tight end and, you know, maybe letting some notable names walk. I mean, look at the principles of the franchise over the years. They've usually taken unknown commodities at the tight end position and thrown them into the mix. I mean, the Jake Ballards, the Kevin Bosses of the world, these were not household names, and probably the fans were having
the same
reaction. Bear Pasco's another one. So the point is, that's actually been a track record of the franchise, it should be of no surprise that they've taken chances on the Will Ties and the Larry Donnells and so forth, who are not high draft picks and are not big-name free agents, when they've been doing that when they won Super Bowls.
Yes. That's true.
Jake Ballard, the Super Bowl year, he was the wild card difference maker.
He was good.
I think he had a great year. Yeah. I mean, he was borderline Pro Bowl that year.
He's very good.
Yeah.
Well, it looks like we had Charlie on the phone line, and then he got so scared of the three of us fighting back on Phil that he actually hung up the phone. I can't tell you how proud I am of the two of you for getting the job done to force Charlie to hang up.
Hey, Charlie was on yesterday, and it was one of the best calls he ever had.
I know it was.
He was so reasonable.
Credit anyway.
I'm sorry, but yeah, he deserves it.
I'm going back towards 2013, by the way, to see other Giants needs. We're a little over time, but, you know, 1 minute
all
or
right,
two.
All right. You're on the show.
You know, well, listen, the cafeteria is not going to get up and pick up, I promise you.
My pizza's waiting.
You will still have an opportunity. And I'm just looking at some of the free agents. Will Beatty in 2013 was a free agent.
Yeah.
So that was one of the players that they had to
No,
take
but he
care
wound up
point.
Coming back.
No, but I'm talking about money being designated.
Yes.
When you're talking about bringing back Martellus Bennett, these are some of the other positions that you had to think about to take care of at the time.
Yes.
That's why I was saying you can't look at it that it's just on an island, Martellus
no,
Bennett,
you
and
can't
everybody
at,
else was going to be taken care
it's
of.
It's not in a box. You have to look at the entire scope and landscape at the time.
Exactly. In terms of some notes for next week and the remainder of this week. No show Thursday, Friday. Everybody is taking a chance to regroup, even those behind the scenes. So no BBKL for the next 2 days. In terms of Monday, media availability for the players is going to be noon. So we're not sure if BBKL is going to be noon on Monday or 1 p.m. Eastern. We'll keep you posted. Stay locked to Giants.com. Also, if for those of you who follow the Giants on Twitter, we'll be posting tweets before the show just to confirm whether or not it's going to be noon and 1 p.m. Eastern. But we will be up and running again on Monday, and we'll have our full slate of shows, all the way through Friday as we get you set for the Philadelphia Eagles. Be back up and running for Week 9. With that being said, enjoy the bye week. Joe in Pennsylvania, you especially, calm down, relax, take it easy. Enjoy the Eagles-Cowboys game and then regroup on Monday. We'll want to hear your thoughts from that contest. With that being said, want to have everybody enjoy the bye week, as we said. For Henry Heinoski, Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Wishing you
Let's
a
eat.
Very enjoyable Wednesday. We will speak to you on Monday here on Giants.com. Have a good one.